Hey, what's going on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? It is Friday, March 8th, 2023-24. I actually did that before. I was writing down a date and I put 2023 instead of 2024 before I realized, and I had to backspace and change that. I don't know why I'm thinking of 2023 lately, but I am. Anyway, this is episode 237 of This Week in Sports. We're back another Friday evening. I'm pretty tired. I have a headache. I don't know why. Ate dinner a little while ago, and I'm just ready to get this episode out there. I said last week's was going to be really quick and easy, and it was still over an hour, but I promise you this episode today is going to be about 30 to 40 minutes. I promise you, I'm going to get it in that sweet spot range of 30 to 40 minutes. And that's going to require less babbling on my part. But so I got really no house cleaning stuff to talk about. I'm just going to jump right in. Not going to tell you about my life, how my week went, none of that BS. So without further ado, let's jump into episode 237 of This Week in Sports. So I'm going to start off with a little combine news. I don't know what it is, but as of right now, maybe it's because my Jets aren't doing anything, making any moves, or haven't, you know, signed anybody really, or haven't been in the news really. I'm not into football right now. We're gearing up for March Madness. The baseball season is right around the corner. I'm focused on my college softball season, which is starting up either next week, or it's supposed to be next Saturday, but we might have some rain coming in, so we might move that up to Friday. We'll see. So I'm not totally focused. We got NBA, of course, coming to an end. It's conference tournament time in, you know, men's college hoops, right? Men's and women's college hoops, as I just stated. So that really takes up my focus in March for the most part. So I don't care where Russell Wilson's going. You know, I don't care about Saquon Barkley right now. I'm getting ready for MLB The Show, which is coming out in like 11 days, I think, something like that. So my mind's not totally on football, but this was pretty cool. Some history was made at the combine. Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy. Is it Xavier? I think it's Xavian Worthy, isn't it? This might be a typo or an autocorrect issue. Let me just double check this. Maybe it is Xavier Worthy. I don't know why I thought it was Xavian. I'm usually pretty good with my notes. Okay, so it is Xavier Worthy. Sorry about that. I should know that. He was in the national, you know, semifinal, made it to the college football playoff. And he's about I think he ranks right now different big boards, but I think he's right around the 10th best wide receiver on consensus big boards, but he might move up a little bit with his 40 time, which broke John Ross's previous record from, I think, 2017. He had an official time of 4.21. John Ross had the previous record of 4.22. Now, John Ross was a wide receiver out of Washington, and he went to the Cincinnati Bengals in the first round, and he didn't really amount to much. I don't even know if he's still in the league. He dealt with some injuries and some different things, and that's another thing you have to watch out for with these speed guys is the injuries, the hammies, and we see it a lot of times with Tyreek Hill in and out of games, the hamstring, the ankle, the this, the that. I'm going to play his 40 time because this is history in the making. So take a listen to this.
Here goes.
Oh!
You can't hear too much. You just hear him like panting as he's running or breathing. But you do hear a little of Rich Eisen when he sees that number hit the score. That 4.21, it's like, oh, damn, he just set an all-time record. And listen, again, like you compare, you want to compare him to the Tyreek Hills of the world. You can see what top end speed a la Tyreek Hill will do for certain teams. And Brandon Cooks early in his career was a guy that I was hoping the Jets would have drafted out of Oregon State. He had some good top end speed. You don't have to be a huge guy. But if you have speed, you can really take the top off of a defense, even a little bit with Mecole Hardman when he came in with the Chiefs, helped them win a number of Super Bowls. You just have that speed guy and it hits different. I mean, CJ2K, granted, he was at the running back position, but you saw what he did with his speed. He holds a top, he's one of the top record holders with his speed, with his 40 yard time. I think he clocked in, it was definitely like top 10, maybe it was top 5 all time, 40 times, but he had an unbelievable career as well. So we'll see if this amounts to anything, but GMs are definitely, it's definitely going to raise some eyebrows, and he definitely is going to move up some big boards if somebody's looking at wide receivers and they're trying to figure out how to separate these couple of guys. Because sometimes it's, you know, you at the same position when there's so many guys, you have to evaluate. And if you're a team that needs maybe some extra speed, but maybe somebody else is a little bit better route runner or better, you know, catching the ball or what have you, you might still pick, you know, Xavier Worthy because of that top end speed. So he's definitely going to elevate whichever team gets him, just with that speed alone, those go routes. Good luck keeping up with a guy like that. I mean, cornerback to me is the hardest position as it is besides the quarterback position. And there's no guarding somebody that runs that fast. The only way to guard them is to face guard them and to be very handsy at the line of scrimmage so they can't get that start and get that burst and get past you. So impressive 40 time for sure. Okay, LeBron finally reached 40,000 points for his career. I mentioned that last week's episode. We knew he was going to hit that. Him and Caitlin Clark were going to hit those milestones this past weekend. That was inevitable, and LeBron did it. Now, does this mean LeBron's the greatest player in history? That's up for debate for some. I still think no. I obviously think that's Michael Jordan, went to 6 finals, won all 6. LeBron's been to a bunch of finals, and what's he, 3-8 or whatever his record is? He's got more losses than he does wins. But, and I don't know if I guess the one in 2020 still does count. It's a championship in the record books, but there was no fans. It was in a bubble. It's kind of got an asterisk next to it. I'm not going to not count it, but, you know, it doesn't count the same. So nobody in the history of the sport, obviously, in the association has scored more points than LeBron James. In fact, he's the only one to surpass 38,000. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sits in second place. But listen, I'm a LeBron hater. You know, I just said Michael Jordan's the best of all time, but it is pretty cool knowing that the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, I grew up watching his whole career unfold. Like Michael Jordan, I remember from the movie Space Jam, and I don't really remember seeing him play a lot growing up. Like those Bulls teams of the 90s, like I was barely a child. Like I was just born in 92, and you know, 95, 96, 97, 90, you know, even, you know, that era of the Bulls and like the Yankees in those late 90s, I was still a young kid. So I don't really remember too much about it. Like I can vividly remember, for whatever weird reason, I can vividly remember Michael Jordan when he made his comeback with the Washington Wizards. I don't know why, but I vividly remember him playing in his last game with the Wizards, which is just weird. I remember that more than I think I remember, you know, him playing with the Bulls. Obviously, I was younger for that. But the point being is, as much as I am a LeBron hater, it is very cool knowing the all-time leading scorer in NBA history is a guy that I got to see play in his entire career. I was old enough to witness it, to remember it. I remember when he took that Cavs team with Anderson Varejao all the way to the finals. He dragged them to the finals. Yeah, they lost, but what he's been able to accomplish, make no mistake about it. I hate on LeBron, but it's not because I don't think he's good. I think he's good. I just don't think he's better than Michael Jordan. That's preference. That's, I say what you want. It's up for debate, whatever. But for me, he's not the greatest of all time. He's the greatest. I mean, he might be the greatest athlete of all time, actually. And what I mean by that is the man is a specimen, a physical specimen. If you created a human being in a lab, it might be it might be LeBron James. The physical prowess, I mean, this guy has no ounce of body fat on him. Tom Brady, we praise him for the TB12 method and the career he carved out. I just saw something recently. He ran a faster 40 time at his current age of, 46 or something right now, than he did when he was 22 at the combine. So it's just a testament to the work, the nutrition, everything that he's done. And LeBron James has been the same way. He is a chiseled animal in every sense of the word, like in a good way. Who wouldn't kill to be LeBron James? His physical stature, he plays physically, he can just drive to the hole, nobody can stop him. He doesn't do it enough, but even now at 40 years old, he is still showing. You know, I talked about last week how he had, 19 in the fourth quarter in that comeback against the Clippers. Like, he still can do it at such a high level. Nobody else can really say that. And, besides Michael and some of these other guys, but it's just he's a physical specimen. So he might actually be the greatest athlete, because there's been talk that he could go to the NFL if he wanted earlier in his career, and he could have played tight end like no problem because he's that good of an athlete and that gifted. So, yeah, make no bones about it. I don't hate on him because I don't think it's not that I don't think he's any good. I just don't think he's the best. But that does not take anything away from what he's done in this accomplishment. So, it's a big one. Nobody's ever surpassed 38,000, and he's up to 40,000. So that says a whole lot, not just about his longevity in the sport, but his greatness too, because you'll see as guys got older throughout the history of the association, their numbers just started to plummet. Maybe they came off the bench. They weren't starters. And, you know, LeBron has been a starter his entire career, and there's been no talk anytime soon of him coming off the bench. Like Russell Westbrook, as he's gotten older, Chris Paul for the first time now is coming off the bench this year. Like, these guys fall off a cliff, but LeBron has not fallen off a cliff. He's just on another level. It's insane. All right, let's move on. Let's talk. Okay, one of the Boris Four, which was down to three after Cody Bellinger signed and is now down to two. Matt Chapman, the third baseman, is headed to San Francisco on a three-year $54 million deal with opt-outs after each of the first two seasons. This is, again, just like the Bellinger deal. It's essentially a one-year deal. Neither of these guys got anywhere close to what they were looking for. And now we're still waiting on Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery to sign, but mum's the word on these two. Buster Olney, I heard him on the Michael Kay show yesterday talk about how he thinks that Snell might be going to the Angels. He might end up going there. The Angels have been very quiet since they dealt Ohtani, or since Ohtani walked to the Dodgers, their crosstown rivals. But word on the street is Snell might go there. And then Montgomery, he was saying, is looking to go back to Texas or like a smaller market team. And nobody seems to really want him either. So I don't know what's going on. Lefties are a commodity, especially very good lefties in this league. And both of them proved last year that they are very good. Blake Snell winning his second Cy Young Award, and Montgomery helping the Rangers after coming over in that trade from St. Louis, you know, to a World Series after losing Jacob deGrom at the beginning of the season, after getting Max Scherzer in a trade with the Mets, who also turned out to be very bad. Montgomery stepped up in a big way in the postseason and helped them win a World Series, and now has nowhere to go. It's just very bizarre. Okay, let's talk about Sunday afternoon's matchup between the Celtics and Warriors. This was an abomination by the Warriors. I don't know what this was, but the Celtics, they've been proving themselves all season long, and they made a statement on Sunday. This was unbelievable. It's actually laughable now, looking back on it, because my brother, we actually went to the driving range I had a softball camp at the college, and then afterwards, my brother wanted to meet up with our grandfather and go hit some golf balls at the driving range because it had been super wet all weekend, and by Sunday, it was really nice, like in the 60s, but it was going to be too wet to go play 18, so we're like, let's go to the driving range. So we went there. It was pretty crowded and everything, but then my brother afterwards came over to watch a little bit of the Warriors game till halftime because he bet Steph Curry to score 35+. He's like, oh, they've been on a tear. They've been winning like 12 out of 15, yada, 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 and I said, Joe, Steph Curry's questionable to play tonight or today because he's got a knee issue. And he's like, what? Where'd you hear that? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I play fantasy basketball. I see these reports. And he ended up playing, but he clearly was not himself. He was 2 of 9, 4 points scored. He was 2 of 14, 0 for 9 from 3. It was just absolutely ridiculous. Jaylen Brown was going off, shot the ball every time he got it, could not stop scoring. This was just unbelievable. Steph was actually 2 of 13, not 2 of 14, but he scored only 4 points. Most of the starters didn't even play in the second half. This game was over. I didn't even turn it on in the second half. They waved the white flag. The Celtics were so good in this game, if you can believe it. They went on a 61-17 run in the first half. They won the game by a final of 140-88. It's their third 50-point win this season, which is an NBA record. No team has ever won 3 50-point games in a single season. Jaylen Brown could have scored 50 easily in this game, but he didn't play much in the second half. He finished with 29 points in like 22 or 20 minutes, something just absolutely ridiculous. And Jaylen Brown did speak after the game and made it very clear that he felt disrespected. Take a listen to this audio. I actually didn't know this until I, heard about this afterwards and the game plan that Steve Kerr had going into this for Jaylen Brown. Very interesting.
What was your reaction when they just sagged off you for the start of the first quarter, just let you shoot? Did you think they were playing mind games with you? Like, what goes through your head when a team does that to you?
First time it's ever happened to me. Honestly, I was a bit surprised. Took a little bit of adjusting, but I think we just took advantage of whatever that attempt was and just made the best of it. For the most part, my job is to get to the paint. We got enough 3-point shooters on our team, so I don't take a lot of threes, or for the most part throughout the season, because we got enough of that. I get to the paint and I usually open it up for everybody else. But if you want to dare me to shoot, we can do that too. You know what I mean? I thought it was a little disrespectful, but we took advantage of it and we didn't look back.
Do you take that personally? It looked like you were exchanging some words with Draymond Green. How do you kind of look at it when a team goes to such great lengths to force you to shoot?
It's never personal. I'm sure they thought that's what their best chance was, or whoever came up with that defensive kind of concept. So it's not personal. It was a little disrespectful to me, but it is what it is. I came out and I do what I do best. My teammates empowered me. It was like, we don't care if you shoot every shot down. And on this team, it's about making the right plays, letting guys feel involved. And I feel like I've been doing that all season long and I'm gonna keep doing that, but don't get it twisted.
Yeah, so that was Steve Kerr's game plan. Look, the Celtics have the number one offense in the NBA. They're like only plus 200 or something of that nature, plus 210, plus 220 to win the NBA Finals, I believe. Not just to make it there out of these, because I was like, okay, they're a sure bet almost to make it out of the East, and I was going to put some money on them if they were like plus 400 or 500, and no, they're not. So Steve Kerr said, what am I going to do to stop this team? He tried to sag off Jaylen Brown like they do with Giannis, basically, because Jaylen Brown is shooting on the season. I think it's in the third, like 34%, 34.8% or something like that from three. And they were like, yo, let's make him beat us. And it just did not work. It was one of those days. Other days it might have worked, but on this day he was hitting his shots and he was on fire. And look, 140-88 is embarrassing. But he also said too, not heard in this clip, but he also said in another clip that look, the Warriors beat them on their home court in the finals a couple of years ago, and this was personal. They were playing, I watched it in the first half. They were playing so hard. They were playing like they were down 15 points to the Warriors when they were blowing them out. So yes, it was personal. And maybe it was because Jaylen Brown felt disrespected in that first quarter, whatever. But they remember losing an NBA Finals on their home court to that team. So they wanted to put the rest of the league, the rest of the association on notice for sure. Okay, let's talk some college softball. The most dominant team in the land, Oklahoma. Okay, they've won, what, 3 straight national championships. They lost for the first time in 71 games, actually for the first time in almost a calendar year, in just about a calendar year. Their last loss in 2023 was to unranked Baylor at the time. And this came out of the blue on Sunday. They were playing their series against Louisiana Lafayette, the Ragin' Cajuns, a team that came into the game 10-11 and somehow knocked off the number one team in the country, Patty Gasso's Oklahoma Sooners, that had a 71 game winning streak. This one needed extra innings. I think it was like tied 4-4, a couple of hits to the left side hole by shortstop that were kind of booted. I'm not sure if the first one was ruled a hit or not, but they were both questionable. One, I think the shortstop had to dive for, so that was definitely a hit. And they end up winning 8-5, or no, 7-5. Yeah, 7-5 in 8 innings. And get the huge, huge upset. And listen, this is why you play the game. You just never know. It doesn't matter whether you're the worst team or the best team on any given... That's why they call it Any Given Sunday, right? The Al Pacino movie. Any Given Sunday, it doesn't matter. You could be... I mean, if you're on that day and the other team is not, this is sports. This is why... You know, you can't become a professional gambler or a professional sports bettor. People do it, but it's a very volatile profession, very volatile thing to gamble with, because you just can't predict whether a team's going to be on today or not, or cover this or cover that or whatever. So, yeah, it was a shocking defeat. But it didn't last too long, because the following game they dominate. I forget who they played, but they scored like 5 runs in the first inning. And so that was kind of a wake-up call for them. I'm sure they're not going to let that one loss affect them. They're the best team in the country by a landslide. Okay. Let's talk Caitlin Clark. We talked about LeBron breaking, 40,000 points, hitting that threshold. Well, Caitlin Clark is now the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history. I am not going to get into the Pistol Pete comparison. What she did is great for her sport. She's one of the greatest. She's the all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball history. In 4 years, she did this. Pistol Pete did his in, 3 years or 2 years with no three-point line. I mean, they're not even comparable. They're not the same sport, really. Nothing is comparable. So stop comparing Pistol Pete to Caitlin Clark, because we would not be comparing Pistol Pete or any men's college basketball player to some all-time great. Like, in the future, we're not going to be comparing like Cooper Flagg to Caitlin Clark and her all-time record. Like, no, that's not a thing. So let's not, get it twisted. These are not the same. She's great in her own right, but we don't have to compare her to Pistol Pete, okay? So on Sunday, she hit the record. She needed, 18 points or whatever. And if you remember last weekend, I was going to put some money. I said it would be a good bet to put, 10 or 15, 20 bucks on the basket or the point to be a free throw to break the record. It was two-pointer, three-pointer, or free throw. And free throw had the worst odds at plus 650, the highest odds. And I was like, man, sprinkle some money on that. Well, of course, it was a free throw, and it cashed, and I didn't bet it. But maybe you listened to my podcast and you took notice and bet that. But it was also cool, because it was her last regular season game, and she did it in front of a crowd that included Maya Moore, Lynette Woodard, Nolan Ryan, Travis Scott, and others. One quick note before I forget. This garnered like a few million, like over 3 million viewers, which was the most in a women's college basketball game in like 25 years. By the way, all those names that I just mentioned, you should recognize. Probably the one you might not recognize is Lynette Woodard, but she was she played way back in the day. Was she in the 60s or the 80s? I'm not exactly sure, but she played at Kansas in the AIAW era. And even though the NCAA does not recognize those stats from that era, she was viewed as the career women's scoring leader before Caitlin Clark broke that record 9-10 days ago, I believe. So, yeah, that's cool that she was there in attendance. So congratulations to Caitlin Clark. Okay, let's talk some sad, sad news. Unfortunately, Chris Mortensen, Mort, has passed away at the age of 72. The legendary NFL reporter passed away Sunday after a long battle with throat cancer. So Chris Mortensen is the guy that you know growing up that reported right alongside Adam Schefter. For those of you that are a bit older, he was Adam Schefter before Adam Schefter. He was Adrian Wojnarowski before Adrian Wojnarowski. He was Shams Charania before Shams. I mean, Mort was a legend for over 30 years at ESPN. He basically was one of the front runners at ESPN in covering NFL football with Chris, Chris Berman, Boomer, but he started in newspaper. He was a newspaper reporter. He transitioned to TV. You know, that's a tough thing to do back then. You know, who knows how you're going to be, received by the audience, but he was a staple and many trusted him in the business, in the NFL business. I mean, while he was going through cancer treatments, while he was in the hospital, Peyton Manning gave him the scoop, on, was it his retirement or no, I think it was on him going to the Broncos. So he reported on that, from his hospital bed. I mean, he was very, very well respected. Again, he was Adam Schefter, poor Adam Schefter. And during every NFL draft, him and Adam Schefter would always be together reporting on different things. And over the last bunch of years, you could tell like how bad a shape that Chris Mortensen was in because he was, you know, having trouble with his speech and kind of slurring his speech and a little bit difficult to understand. But through thick and thin, he continued to work and he continued to do his job. And it always, I marvel at that. These guys that are going through cancer treatments and they're still getting up and going to work every day is just mind-boggling to me. I don't know that I'd have the strength to do that. I'd be that guy that's like, take pity on me, please. You know, wait over me hand and foot. Make me food. Make me, you know, help clean me up. Like I just want to lay in bed and watch TV and not do anything. And you know, so and by the way, he had stage 4 throat cancer since about 2016. So this man, I mean, Chris Mortensen, he fought like hell to stay alive and it was probably painful as all hell. And what he had to go through, I saw obviously my grandmother, go through cancer treatments at the age of 90. And 91 when she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer a couple of years ago. And I'm thinking to myself, like, who wants to go through chemo at 90 years old and deal with that? Like, just live out the rest of your life and in peace and just succumb to this cancer. And no, she, you know, she fought for like 2 years and battled up until the end when it got really bad. And then it was just like, please can, you know, she go already, because she was just in such agonizing pain those last few months and weeks and days leading up to her ultimate demise. But yeah, I mean, it astonishes me what some of these people go through and the fact that they continue to fight like that. I'd like to think that would be me, but deep down it's like, man, no way. Like going through chemo treatments and all that, it wipes you out from what I've heard. And it's just, I'd be like, nah, I'm tapping out. Like, I just want to lay in bed today. I don't want to get up and go to work. No way. And these people that do it, nothing but the utmost of respect. And it's sad. As I'm getting older, obviously icons from my childhood and my teen years are going to continue to pass away and die. And I get it. That's the circle of life. That's how things work. That's how humanity works. And it's just, it's crazy to think that, because, or to see that, and to see somebody of that stature who I literally grew up watching. But again, it's also cool because I didn't know the whole story behind the man, Chris Mortensen. So reading up about him and his early days and his transition to TV, it's cool to see that stuff. And if you haven't seen it, Adam Schefter had a nice little, I think it was 4 or 6 minute tribute that was put out on social media through ESPN, you know, talking about Mortensen and his life and everything at ESPN. So that was really well done. So yeah, RIP to a legend. Chris Mortensen. All right. I said I don't have the energy to talk about football, but I'll just briefly mention the fact that the Broncos released Russell Wilson on Monday. This is obviously big news because this will go down in history as the second worst trade, in my opinion, in history. I did some research on this courtesy of Bleacher Report, and I was thinking this might be the worst trade in history, but the Herschel Walker trade I'll mention in a second was clearly worse. So they released him on Monday. The Broncos sent 5 draft picks, 2 first rounders, and 3 players to the Seattle Seahawks for Russell Wilson. And then they extended him immediately on a $285 million contract. Again, this was so bad because he had 11 wins in 2 years and now they're releasing him. And we all know the controversy that when he got there, Nate Hackett was the head coach last year. He had his own office, Russell Wilson. Players needed to make like appointments to see him, like just totally bad, bad, bad stuff. And you thought they started to turn around this year, but then they faltered at the end. They lost by like 70 to the Dolphins, but then turned it around with Sean Payton, started to make a run and then lost to the Patriots, and then their season went up in flames. But surprisingly, not the worst trade in NFL history, and I'll tell you why. The worst trade in NFL history was in 1989 when the Minnesota Vikings dealt linebacker Jesse Solomon, David Howard, cornerback Isaac Holt, defensive end Alex Stewart, 1990 first, second, and sixth round picks, 1991 first and second round picks, and 1992 first, second, and third round selections. That's a mouthful. The Vikings sent all of that to the Cowboys for 27-year-old Herschel Walker. And what happened in that deal? Well, actually, Darren Nelson, a running back, was part of the deal, but he ended up with the Chargers. The Vikings also got 2 third rounders, a fifth rounder, and a 10th rounder back. But Herschel Walker never rushed for more than 825 yards in 2 seasons with the Vikings, and the Cowboys used that trade to launch their dynasty of the 90s, in which they won a bunch of Super Bowls. So, yeah, there's no way that Russell Wilson deal even comes close by comparison to this. Not even. Insane. And now who knows where Russell will go. He met briefly with the Giants on his way to visit the Steelers today. I really don't care. It is what it is. I mean, he could go to the Steelers, whatever. I'm hearing he might go to the Raiders, whatever. Staying in the division in the AFC West, it is what it is. They'll beat up on each other. And then my Aaron Rodgers-led Jets will swoop in and win the AFC. But again, I'm just not in the football mood right now. I don't care to talk about deals or Janu Smith going to the Dolphins or Mike Evans deal or any of it. I'm just over it. Or the Bills, who cut like half their team yesterday to save a bunch of cap money. I don't care for it. So we're going to move on. And it actually is going to be interesting to see what the Broncos do. Obviously, they're going to draft a quarterback, but if they... are they going to bring in like a Kirk Cousins, something like that? Remains to be seen. But yeah. And again, I said Russell Wilson won just 11 games in 2 years for a total of $124 million guaranteed. They paid $11.2 million, which is 3 times more per win than San Francisco was paying for Brock Purdy's entire 4-year contract of $3.7 million. That's just incredible. And then one final football note, Jason Kelce is calling it quits. He actually may go down as the greatest center of all time after he spent all 13 of his years in Philadelphia, and he's finally retiring. I know he was coaxed out of retirement last year, but now it's official. He got very emotional at his press conference, and now it becomes a bidding war for his services in the broadcast booth. Don't get it twisted. He has a very good podcast with his brother. He's very likable. He's personable. You see all the antics when he was at Chiefs games, and he's just a fun personality, and he's going to be a very good broadcaster, a la the Tony Romos and all that good stuff. So I'm curious to see what ends up happening with him. Oh, and then one final story on this. This is one of the cooler stories you'll see. Speaking of cancer, Jason Kelce actually let his trainer tape his ankles for his retirement speech because I believe the trainer has been there throughout his entire career, his entire 13-year tenure with the Eagles. He started off as assistant athletic trainer and then head athletic trainer throughout his career. And he was along for the ride the whole time with Kelce. And he actually missed Jason Kelce's final game due to the fact that he has cancer and he was undergoing a chemo treatment for his cancer. So they have a really good, you know, history again for 13 years and they're like family. And Jason Kelce, that was a really cool gesture to let him tape his ankles for his press conference, for his retirement press conference. Okay, the Devils. Today was actually the NHL trade deadline. The Devils fired Lindy Ruff a couple days ago after a subpar 30-27-4 start and a second-round appearance in last year's playoffs. Obviously, they've gone down the tubes this year. They're out of playoff contention pretty much with less than like 20 games remaining. And again, today was the trade deadline. They also traded their leading goal scorer, Tyler Toffoli, to the Jets in exchange for a second-round pick this year and a third-round pick in 2025. Sorry, hockey fans, I don't know much about the sport, so I'm not getting into any other trades that went down today. Okay, I spoke about EA Sports College Football 25, which will come out in July. I've mentioned it the past couple weeks. Players are going to get $600 and a copy of the game if they opt in. Well, one player that's not opting in is Arch Manning. You won't be able to play as him in the game. Because he decided that he wants to just focus on football. I think it's actually bizarre that he was a five-star recruit and he's going to sit behind Quinn Ewers yet again when he could go anywhere in the country. He could play at, you know, his uncle's schools. You got Ole Miss, you've got Tennessee. He could go to anywhere he wants and probably be the starter. And yet he's going to sit behind Quinn Ewers yet again. It's weird. It's not like he needs the money, the $600 or whatever, but he wants to focus his attention on football and stay on the field, and that's fine, I guess. But Quinn Ewers is opting in or did opt in, so you will be able to at least play as one Texas quarterback. And I believe over 10,000 players or athletes have already opted into the game, so you're going to have a lot of options, so don't worry about that. All right, so the Celtics won by 50, and then somehow they blew a 22-point fourth quarter lead against the Cavs team that was without Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, and they lost it to D. Wade. But no, not that Dwayne Wade or D. Wade, but Cleveland's own D. Wade, Dean Wade. So actually, both Kelce brothers were in attendance wearing custom Cleveland jerseys for this game. I bet they didn't think that they were going to have an awesome fourth quarter on hands or an awesome game to watch. But they're both from Cleveland. They grew up in that area. So they were kind of probably having a little celebration for Jason Kelce's retirement and whatever. And so the Celtics came into this game riding an 11-game win streak and coming off that beatdown against the Warriors. And out of nowhere, Dean Wade went off for 20 in the fourth quarter, including the game-winning dunk with 19 seconds left. If you don't know, Dean Wade is really a nobody. He had only 4 20-point games in his entire 4-year career before going off for 20 in the fourth quarter of this game. It's unbelievable. So the Cavs pull off the stunning upset, 105-104. And they are currently sitting, again, this is a sneaky good Cavs team. They are currently sitting... they were in the second spot. They might have dropped to the 3 spot now, or they're back in the 2. I can't quite keep track. Yeah, they're just behind Milwaukee. by half a game, and they're currently sitting in the three spot. And then watch out, Orlando's in the four. The Knicks continue to slide. They're in the five seed. Miami's in the six. My Brooklyn Nets lost to the Pistons last night. They're just lost. That team is lost. I'm done with them. But yeah, stunning upset there for the Cavs. Nobody saw that coming, especially the Dean Wade stuff. Crazy. All right, let's talk Duke's recruiting class. I mentioned Cooper Flagg just in passing earlier, but Duke landed yet another elite prospect. This is an African player. He's 7'2". I'm going to butcher his name. I apologize. His name is Kaman Maluak, something like that. Maluak. But he is a force to be reckoned with. He comes, I forget which country in Africa he's from, but I was reading a little bit about it earlier. He's 17, 18, but, he's in one of those, like how the NBA has those programs for overseas athletes in other countries and stuff. He's part of that NBA program, and he announced he's going to go to Duke. They now have Duke, that is, now has five stars, the number one recruiting class, and the number one player in Cooper Flagg coming next season. Listen, John Shire, since he's taken over for Coach K, make no mistake about it. This dude can definitely recruit. There's no question about it. But again, there's only one ball to go around. All these All-Americans and, you know, McDonald's All-Americans and five-star recruits, they're going to get greedy. They're going to, you know, we saw it with Zion, with when R.J. Barrett was there. And then I forget the third guy. He hasn't done really anything in the NBA so far, but all three of them were like top 14, top 15 picks, whatever it was. And they didn't really make a deep run that year either. So it's going to be interesting dynamic to see. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win the national championship next year, but they're definitely a team to watch. And, you know, again, with all those guys, it's going to be interesting to see how they gel, because these are going to be one and done guys without question. All right, big blow to the West number one team, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns, it was announced yesterday, will be out indefinitely with a torn meniscus in his left knee. I really don't know when this happened. I don't watch too much Minnesota T-Wolves basketball, West Coast games. I go to bed early or by 11, and I haven't watched too much of them, but so I can't really tell you when it happened. But tough blow for them, but don't tell Anthony Edwards that, because last night he poured in 44 points on 18 of 35 shooting, shouldering the load in a 113-111 win over the Pacers. And the final sequence of the game, Anthony Edwards with the biggest play of the game.
Edwards can't hit the second. Pacers have a chance. Up ahead, Nesmith blocked! Edwards getting up, and good night!
Yeah, so Anthony Edwards, actually insane. He misses the free throw, the second free throw, so it's a two-point game. They throw it up the court. Naismith goes up for the layup, and Anthony Edwards gets a running start, and he jumps, blocks this ball, and actually hits his head on the rim in the backboard at 6'4". He's a freak athlete. It's why he was drafted number one, and it was just an unbelievable play, individual play. And listen, Minnesota, you know, A-Rod is their owner now, and they've been a fun team to watch for sure, and that was a crucial win for them against a pretty decent Pacers team. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, in other news, this is an interesting one. Fox Sports will now broadcast a primetime college football game every Friday during the season with games from the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Mountain West. Okay, big news coming out yesterday is that 57-year-old Mike Tyson will fight 27-year-old Jake Paul on July 20th. The fight will be broadcast around the world on Netflix, and it will be free to Netflix subscribers, so you don't have to pay like a pay-per-view type of fee through Netflix or anything like that. If you have Netflix, you get to watch this if you choose to watch it. Now, say what you will, 57-year-old Mike Tyson versus a Jake Paul. What is Jake Paul? Who is Jake Paul? Well, he is 9-1 as a professional boxer, but he hasn't really faced anyone all that good, like some washed up MMA guys that don't have boxing experience, stuff like that. He's an influencer turned boxer, but what he is doing, I'm not knocking anything that he's doing because he's making millions upon millions of dollars. I'm hearing that him and Tyson will get around $20 million each, which is just crazy. And he's doing something nobody's ever done. He's getting draws. He's fighting guys that, you know, nobody's expecting, kind of, and just doing it a different way and making so much money doing it. So you can't knock him. Him and his brother, man, that they've made so much money. It's unbelievable. And don't sleep on Mike Tyson. I wouldn't want to get in a ring with him, and neither should you. I've seen videos. I mean, he hasn't fought since 2020, and yeah, he's almost 58 years old, but if you see videos of him training, this dude is special. Still got it. I mean, he bit a dude's ear off, for God's sakes. When he's in the ring, nobody knows what he's capable of, so I wouldn't sleep on him, but I'll watch this just because it's free. I'm not a big, huge boxing fan, but this will draw those boxing fanatics, the old school guys that grew up on Mike Tyson. I mean, this is going to be interesting. It's in the middle of the summer, so there's no reason to not watch it. Okay, if there's one story you read this weekend, make it the one about Bucky McMillan, the 40-year-old head coach at Samford, who went from Birmingham High School coach directly to Division I head basketball coach. And in 3 years, this team has been electric. They've set the record this year for wins, 26-5. They are probably going to win their conference, and watch out for them if they make the NCAA tournament, the March Madness tournament, because they love to 3-and-D. Every guy can shoot threes, every guy can shoot free throws, and they press all game long. They play 10 guys. Nobody plays a whole lot of minutes. They get fresh legs in and out, and you know, this is what March is all about. So really good story there on The Athletic. If you have Apple News Plus or subscribe to The Athletic, you can read that there. I also read a really good story about Tom Izzo and his adopted son. Some of you might remember his son earlier this year had that historic, but it was all over the place. That video of him scoring his first college bucket against Rutgers. He threw up a prayer and it clanked around the rim and then went in. Really cool story. He was adopted. It was actually Nick Saban that led them to this kid because he's from West Virginia, but just a cool story there. But anyway, Samford, back to that story, is looking to get to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 24 years. Really good story. Go read that or look into Samford if you're one of those that dives deep into the sleeper teams in March. Okay. By now, last thing really, I live in New Jersey, so this has been huge news the last few days. State tournament, NJSIAA Group 2 state semifinal boys basketball game between Manasquan and Camden. Camden hits a free throw. There's like 6 seconds left. Manasquan runs down the court. They heave up a three. It doesn't go in, but guys, right under the basket for Manasquan, gets the rebound, lays it back in with like 0.6 on the clock. Ref under the basket says basket's good. Everybody starts celebrating. Next thing you know, the refs convene at midcourt, huddle together, talk to somebody from the NJSIAA or whatever. And next thing you know, they overturn the call, wave off the basket, give Camden the win. Video evidence clearly shows there's a courtside video from a fan cell phone, clear as day. There was video because it was being live streamed. That shows clear as day. This was on Fox News. This I saw on OutKick. I've seen this everywhere. Doug Gottlieb talking about it. You name it. Everyone clamoring for them to overturn this. The head coach of Manasquan has been on basically every talk show imaginable. It's just terrible for the sport. It's terrible for these kids who this is their last game ever. Some of them seniors, and this is how it's going to be remembered. And then for Camden, on the flip side of that, they're tainted now. They go on to win a championship tomorrow at Rutgers, and it's going to be tainted because they don't deserve to be there. Now, some said that they should give up, that they should just give it up and say, okay, clearly we lost the game, so here you go, Manasquan, you can go in our place. Honestly, I wouldn't do that. If the refs gave me the win, I'm taking the win because that's how it works, right? So whether it's tainted or not, I'm not nice enough to be like, oh, here you go. We didn't really win, so you guys go and play in the championship instead of us. Sorry, that ain't me. I wouldn't do that. And I don't blame Camden for playing in the game. It's just a bad look all around. They need to use this to make changes, to get better, use video replay or something, because listen, Manasquan took this to court. They tried to appeal it. It was denied. Camden's going. They're playing in this game tomorrow. They could have easily overturned this. I think they should have, but it's a tough break, and it's been something that's all in the news everywhere you look. So from New Jersey, of course, and actually the former head coach at my high school was an assistant. Actually is an assistant on Manasquan. So yeah, crazy that they got, you know, hosed in the way they did. And it was a 46-45 final score too. So they lose by 1 point, even though they should have won by 1 point. It's just insane how much traction, though, that this game has gotten throughout the country, not just here in New Jersey. It's been everywhere. Okay, and some college basketball real quick. Unusual activity in UAB Temple game, I think that was yesterday, was flagged. So there's a watchdog company called US Integrity. They sent out an alert to casinos yesterday regarding unusual wagering activity on this UAB Temple game. The betting line went from UAB -1.5 to UAB -8 in the span of hours. Then at tip off, it was closer to 7 in favor of UAB, and the final score was 100-72. So they obliterated Temple. I mean, you want a point shave and not make it look obvious, Temple, don't lose by 28 points. And they did this in their most recent game against, was it Tulsa or Tulane? They were favored by like 5. They were losing 16-2 at one point. They didn't cover that. So apparently, a source in the gambling space says US Integrity, this company, has been monitoring Temple games for a while now. So I don't know what it is with Temple. They always got something going on. I remember a number of years ago when I was a kid, the head coach at the time told a player to go break a kid's arm, and he actually like did it, I believe. So they're just like crazy over there at Temple. But yeah, something to keep a watch on. And if you never heard of US Integrity, because I haven't either, they were the ones involved in detecting the Alabama Crimson Tide baseball betting scandal last spring that led to the firing of Coach Brad Bohannon. So we'll keep an eye on that and monitor that. But this is, you know, the world we live in with gambling and sports and college kids now making crazy amounts of money with NIL. They're just going to get greedier and greedier. And, you know, who knows what happened there. Okay, this is spectacularly wild. Remember that Dolphins-Chiefs game that was in unbelievably freezing temperatures, -4 degrees at kickoff, to be precise, in January, when there was videos of like the fridges were actually keeping the beers warm because as soon as they took it out, things turned immediately to ice? Well, 12 fans have been advised that they need amputations for going to this game and for frostbite. Now, I don't know if this is fingers. It's probably a combination of fingers, toes. I hope it's nobody's ears or anything like that, but most likely it's probably toes. 12 fans. That is a detriment to the sport. That is just, I mean, it's terrible. And I think that the NFL and Roger Goodell should be sued over this by these fans. They should at least have their medical bills paid for. This game never should have taken place. These temperatures were ridiculously freezing. I mean, they moved a playoff game with the Bills because of snow, but yet they couldn't move this game in Kansas City because of the freezing temperatures. It's dangerous. And you're taking kids to these games and everything else, and it's just a bad, bad look. So the wind chill at kickoff was -27 degrees. So, of course, this was going to happen. Just asinine. Okay, that about wraps it up. Last thing, on this date in sports, March 8th, 1971, Joe Frazier ends Muhammad Ali's 31-fight winning streak at MSG. He retained the heavyweight boxing title by unanimous points decision over 15 rounds in the fight of the century. So there you have that. One last quick note, you've got NBA on right now throughout the weekend. Again, we're close to tournament time, so college basketball. There is a golf tournament going on. I think I saw there's like a six-way tie at the top of the leaderboard. It's supposed to rain this weekend, so I'll be staying inside just watching sports. Maybe this will be the weekend that I catch up on this Patriots documentary. I don't know. I'm going to try my best, but we'll see. It's my final week of my fantasy playoffs, playing the number one team. All my guys are just not playing well and are injured and out. So it's not been looking good. I need a miracle to finish in second at this point because I'm losing 8-3. And the third place guy who I smoked last week is winning by a lot. So I'm probably going to drop to third. But as long as my guys like Maxi and Wemby and whatnot are healthy going into next week, I should be fine. I just wanted to try to avoid the first place guy in the playoffs because I honestly don't think I'm going to beat him, although he did just lose Carl Anthony Towns, which does help me, but we'll see how that plays out. So a lot to do this weekend. Enjoy it as best you can. Stay safe out there. I'm the Pody signing off. I'll see everybody next week.